invasion and conquest. And we would like you to follow along as we try to get through this lesson. It's going to take a, it's going to have to be a rush job to get through all of this one. I think I've got 40-something slides to go through, so I'm going to really be moving tonight, and I'm sorry about that. I will ask a few questions, and remember, that's group number one, this is two, and that's three. So if I ask a group to answer, I appreciate you. You really did good on Sunday, and I appreciate that very much. All right, as we begin this afternoon, you remember that Moses died, and so God speaks to Joshua, the first chapter in verse 1. He tells him that you're going to be the new leader, and you need to get up, go over Jordan, and everywhere you walk, the land will be the land that was basically had been promised, and the promise had been made to Abraham, and we learned that back in what book? Number one, what book did we first learn about Abraham's promise? Genesis chapter, good, all right, Genesis chapter 12. Very good. And we learn from this, also it gives the borders here very briefly, from the wilderness, and this Lebanon is called, even to the great river, the river Euphrates, all the land of the Hittites, and to the great sea toward the going down of the sun. And we looked at those borders on Sunday, and you can find those right here. No one will be able to stand against you. What a great thing for God to tell Joshua right now. You know, you're not going to have to worry. Nobody's going to stand against you. As I was with Moses, I'll be with you. And Joshua knew how God had been with Moses and all the things that had taken place. But he tells him to go on and be of good courage and do not be afraid. Chapter 1 and verse 6. You will lead the people to inherit Canaan. You must do everything commanded you. Do not turn to the right hand or to the left. What can we get from this particular statement? Do we have anything that's similar to that in the New Testament? Group number two. Do we have anything similar to that in the New Testament? Don't add to it or take away from it. Find that in the book of Revelation. Exactly right. So, this is basically the same thing that God is telling Joshua. Don't turn to the right, don't turn to the left, but to keep everything that's commanded you. Well, that tells us a little bit more, doesn't it? That you are to do those things that are commanded. Same thing goes for us today. Exactly. You must not turn to the right or left. You will succeed if you're guided by what is written in the law and you obey it. This is the different areas where the tribes will be placed when they get across Jordan. I just kind of threw that in. I won't charge extra for that. Joshua prepares to cross the Jordan. It was a time of flooding at this particular time, the Jordan was, which meant it could be as much as 12 feet deep and very, very swift at this particular time. But Joshua believed God could take them across the Jordan without any problem. The tribes of Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh were reminded of what? Number three, what were they reminded of? Anybody know? Say it again. All right. They promised to go over and help the tribes take the west side of Jordan. And that way they could keep their land on the east side of Jordan. Just those 2.5 tribes would be staying on that side. The tribe of Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh. These tribes had chosen land on the east side and had been granted by Moses. Was there any controversy when they first asked Moses about taking or keeping, using, staying on that side of Jordan? Do you remember if there was anything that was said by Moses at that particular time about them wanting to stay over there? Anybody know that? I'll just open that up to everybody. You may remember that Moses kind of chided them for wanting to stay over there because he thought they didn't want to go and help take the other part of the land. They said, no. That's not what we mean. You know, we'll go and help, but we want our part of our land over here. And after they explained it to Moses, he granted that wish to them. And they did promise to go over and help. They were not to return to their homes until the task was complete. And that was in Numbers, the 32nd chapter, where we read about that. The armed warriors answered Joshua and said, "We have agreed to all that you say, and we will follow you as we followed Moses. And whoever rebels against your word, they'll die." That's how serious they were about following Joshua, which I'm sure it made Joshua feel good. Of course, that gives you the idea of those three tribes. Reuben, Gad, and the half tribe of Manasseh was on the east side, and the remainder of the tribes on the other side, with the exception of one tribe. Which one? Levi. Levi was scattered all over. How many cities did Levites have, you know? Anybody know? 48 cities. Yeah. And we're going to look at some of those as time goes by. There were two spies that were sent into Jericho. Remember, before spies were sent in, and there were how many sent in before? Two? Number two. How many were sent in before? 12. 12 were sent in before when they went from Kadesh up into the land. Now there's only two being sent in. And so they went to Jericho, and they went to a lady's house, Rahab. She was a harlot. They went into her home, and she hid them from the soldiers so they couldn't find them. And then she knew that God had given them the land. This land, she knew it because of the things that they had already heard. Everyone in Jericho was afraid. She told the spies because they heard what the Lord had done. Alright. They knew that the people of Jericho knew what God had done as far as the Red Sea and drying it up so that Israel could cross on dry land. Now, how would they hear about that? Weren't all the Egyptians killed? Were all the Egyptians killed? Anybody know that? No, they were not. All of the army was, a lot of them were slaughtered, but there was probably some that made it back to tell what was going on, and I'm sure God wanted them to do that, to let the other people in Egypt know just what kind of God they were dealing with. And so, but they'd also heard about the defeat of Sihon and Og. Anything strange about these two folks? What do we know about them? What were they? Giants. What was one of the things that Kadesh Barnea, when they went in, that they were afraid of when the spies went up? Those people are, makes us look like grasshoppers. They look like giants in our eyes. And now, the first ones they come to are land of the giants. And they took them with God's help, with no trouble. There is no courage, Rahab tells the spies, no courage left in any of us because of Jehovah your God. He is, and listen to this statement that she makes, He is God of heaven and earth. You know, if we could just get people to believe that today, that He is God of heaven and earth, we wouldn't have near the problem today that we do if everybody would believe in God and what all He has commanded. But she went on to ask the spies or tell the spies, swear to me that you will save me and my family when you come to take this city. The spies promised her they'd do that. So Rahab helps them to escape the city by letting them down the wall, and she used a what color cord? Scarlet cord, okay? And they told her to do something with that cord. What was it? Number three, what did they tell her to do with that cord? Tie it to the window and leave it hanging when they come to take the land so they would know where she was, okay? And that way they would not bother her or her family that was in that place. She told them to flee to the mountains. Don't go to the river. That's where they'll expect you to go. All these soldiers, they're going to head after you. And so they went to the mountains. She told them to stay there 3 days, and the soldiers would be weary looking for you, and they'll return back to the city of Jericho. And that's what happened. They returned to the camp across the Jordan and reported back to Joshua exactly what had taken place. The spies told Joshua, truly, the Jehovah has delivered the land into our hands. How different was this from the first spies? Boy, totally different, isn't it? The first ones, it was 10 of them said, we can't do it. Only two said they could. Here, both of these that had gone, Jehovah has just laid it out in our hands. Joshua prepares for the crossing by sending officers throughout Israel, throughout the camp, to tell them it was time to pass over Jordan. So early the next morning, Joshua led Israel closer to the Jordan, but he stayed there 3 days before they crossed. The area across the Jordan from Jericho, and that's where they was before they crossed over, was a plain that extended about 6.5 miles. So they had a pretty good area on the east side of Jordan where they kind of were camped there. And this kind of gives you an idea of about what it may have looked like on the east side of Jordan. Jordan at flood stage is a pretty rough looking place. Not able to stand very easily at all. And you picture small children and animals and women and so forth trying to cross something, even at flood stage especially, they would have a lot of trouble trying to get across this Jordan. The priests were to lead the way to the Jordan carrying the Ark of the Covenant. The people were to stand back somewhere around 3,000 feet, and watch. About 3,000 feet. How far is that from here? Anybody got an idea? I lived here when I was young, so I know, you know, from here to the cemetery up here is about 0.5 mile. It was a little bit further than that, basically. That's how far Israel stayed back to watch. Now, what could you see that far away? You ever thought about that? Over 0.5 mile away. You wouldn't think you could see very much, right? Well, the thing is, I'm going to show you what you might be able to see, or at least tell you about it. So God told Joshua, today Israel will know I am with you as I was with Moses. They're going to know it today. The priests were told to go into the Jordan. When you get to the brink of it, you stand there, and here's what's going to happen. Hereby you'll know that God is among you. He will drive out your enemies. the priest's feet rest in the waters, and the waters will cut off and stand in one heap. So they're gonna be on your right side. They're gonna stand up in a heap. But the waters on down below, they're gonna flow on down. But you notice that it says that they're gonna back up the waters all the way to Adam. Now this is kind of hard to see, but this is approximately where they would cross. And this is represented by the water. What we don't realize a lot of times is just exactly how tall that water might have been. It could have been as much as 150 to 300 feet high. Now, could you see that a half a mile away? Absolutely. You could see a big wall standing up that high and the water going back. You could see that very easily. That lets the people know somebody's in control here, and it's not just Joshua. The waters before them flowed on down, so there wasn't anything to their left side. It went on down to the Dead Sea, as it normally does. The Israelites crossed over against Jericho. The soldiers from Reuben, Gad, and half-tribe of Manasseh passed over, and they had 40,000 armed soldiers that crossed over. Well, wait a minute. What about their people on the east side of Jordan? What about them? Number three, what happened to those folks? Their wives and their children? Anybody there for them? Did they just leave them to fend for themselves? What about it too? All right, enough stayed back to guard everything, to take care of the families and to guard them in case any enemy come in. We don't hear of anybody coming in, but there were some that stayed there, that they were warriors as well, but they didn't go across. Only 40,000 went over. And we'll see later when all these folks go back that Joshua tells them to do something, and we'll get to that later on, what he told them to do. The priest stood on dry land until all Israel passed over, the third chapter in verse 17 tells us. Everybody passed, and the instruction to each of the tribe was select one person, and you take a stone out of the middle of the Jordan and take it with you and bring it out onto the west side. And what they were to do was to take those 12 stones and to build a memorial. And the memorial was to provide them a question and answer time with their children. When they passed by this, and I don't know how big those stones were. I don't have a clue. I guess one man pick it up, it'd be pretty good size, but there were 12 of them. And so they piled them up in a heap. And it would be kind of odd, you know, in that particular area, just see 12 stones stacked up. And so when the children would come to the father, they'd say, Dad, what's these stones here for? And Dad was to say, what? What was Dad to tell them? Tell them the story of how they crossed the Jordan, how they went across on dry land, how the waters backed up, stood up in a heap, and all the way back to the city of Adam. Man. And then they were to tell their children. And they were to tell their children what was the problem that happened later on that we know of that didn't happen. They didn't tell their children. They didn't understand, because a lot of them didn't understand what had taken place. The great thing that God had done for the Israelites. On the 10th day of the first month, they came across the Jordan. They they were told by God at that point, Israel encamped at Gilgal, which was the first, just across the Jordan River, and Jehovah commanded that all the males born in the wilderness be circumcised. So you mean to tell me that they have gone 40 years and none of the males have been circumcised? You ever thought about that? And just exactly why? What was in the desert? There were no rocks, things that were suitable that they would use. But here in this land, there were rocks suitable to make knives out of. And they used those to circumcise all the males. Those would be what age? What age would be circumcised? Number one, tell me that. 40 and under. Down to how many days old? 8 days old. All right, good. All right, so on the 14th day of this month, what month would this be, by the way? They're fixing to celebrate the Passover. What day, what month would it be? Number two. Anybody remember? No. What was it called then? Abib. Yeah, Abib. All right. Just checking y'all out. See if y'all been paying attention while Tim and Wayne and all them was teaching y'all. Alright, so it had been about 41 years since the first Passover. Anybody disagree with that? You think it would be 40 or 41 since the first? When was the second one done, number one? When was the second Passover observed? At Sinai. That was the second one. How long has it been since Sinai? 40 years since Sinai. So this would be the 41st, the way I count it anyway, the 41st Passover, 34th year since the first Passover. The years of wandering in the wilderness are over. They are now settled in at Gilgal. And looking at where Gilgal is it starts out just across the Jordan. It very possibly changed on further to the west after this. And as we look at 2 Kings, the second chapter here, it tells of when Elijah and Elisha were at, it says that they went, Elijah went with Elisha from Gilgal. And Elijah said unto Elisha, tarry here, I pray thee, for the Lord hath sent me to Bethel. And Elisha said to him, as the Lord liveth, and as thy soul liveth, I will not leave thee. So they went down to Bethel. Does that make sense? All right. Let's look at that. Here's Gilgal right there. We know that it was right across Jordan. All right. So there may be another Gilgal right up in this particular area. And if Elijah and them was at that Gilgal there, right there, you could understand them going down to Bethel, which would be just a little bit away from there. Okay. And that's probably the reason that some of the tours that they took, to capture other nations and so other, the Hittites and the Jebusites and all those. Some of them may have actually stopped at this other Gilgal. We're not sure exactly about that. So, a person would go through Jericho, to enter into the central hill country of the land of Canaan. It was just a natural way to go. Jericho was in the path, so Israel more or less had to take that. And it had to be removed so they could move on forward from that point. Joshua looked toward the city of Jericho, and there stood a man with a sword drawn. Joshua asked the man, "Are you on our side or are you on the enemy?" That'd be the first thing I'd want to know, wouldn't you? Are you for us or are you against us? Well, man, the answer he got, the man replied, "Neither. I'm not on your side. I'm not on their side. I've come as the prince of the Lord's army." And at that point, Joshua stretched himself out on the ground, face down, and worshiped him. What message does my Lord have for his servant? He told him to put off his shoes, you're on holy ground. Who else was told that? When? At the burning bush. Good, good. Glad somebody's awake. So who is this prince? That's the next thing. So notice that Joshua fell on his face to worship him, similar to what Moses did, and that's in Exodus 3, by the way. The text calls him Jehovah in chapter 6, verse 2. It's not just an angel. And we know that because the book of Revelation tells us angels don't accept worship. Revelation 19:10 tells us that. Let's see if I can pull that up here right quick. 19:10 says, this is John talking, and he said, "And I fell at his feet to worship him, and he said to me, See thou do it not. I am thy fellow servant and of thy brethren that have testimony of Jesus. Worship God, for the testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy." So, you don't worship angels. So this was not an angel. He calls him Jehovah. The mound of Jericho covered about 7 acres. 7 acres. I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Bible school was about 9 acres. The whole complex up here, the Bible school is on, is about 9 acres. You cut off the fence where it goes across the, right next to the, Highway 31, you might have 7 acres from there back. It'd be close to that. But now this is just the city itself where people live. And you picture houses that were built, they were built on the wall, you know, up the side of the wall. And then another house would be built against that house, and another house would be built against that house, and another house against that house, all throughout that whole city. If you've been into some third world countries, which Brazil was one I've been to, and you see going up a hill that there's a house built, and then the house above it is built on against the wall of it, and you just go on down all the way. And there's a lot of third world countries that are built that way. But this was the part that was just enclosed. The farm fields were all outside of Jericho. So they would have to go outside to plow their fields and those kind of things. Several ways could be used to actually enter into these cities by enemies. Okay? A few of them, are that they could dig under the wall. Okay? I don't know. I'm sure they didn't have picks and shovels, and I know they didn't have excavators and those kind of things, but they could dig under the wall. The only problem with that would be probably at the same time you're down there digging, there's somebody on top of that wall that's doing what? They're probably shooting at you, you know? That just makes sense, doesn't it? But there's another way they did it. They could soak the foundations with water. That is, if water's available, okay? Some places there wasn't water available. Some of them used ladders to go up, scale up to the top to enter a city. Some of them used a ramp to get into the top. And that means that they would bring dirt and pile it up. piled up until they had a complete dirt ramp built all the way to the top. And then they could run up that ramp to get up over the wall. They also had battering rams. You know, a lot of men get a hold of a big piece of timber and run against the gate. You know, you've seen that before. They had grappling hooks that they would throw over the wall and climb up a rope. They had towers on wheels to smash either the gate or the top part of the wall to knock them over. We don't think about those folks having that kind of instrumentation a lot of times. Things on wheels, right? Well, they did have it. There we go. Here you see a relief, and these are some tablets that have been found that show some things that took place around capturing cities, different cities. And you can see here, these guys had their bow and arrows, but they also had a shield that they stood behind that they could shoot arrows at those guys up on top up there to kind of discourage them from shooting back at them, I guess. But here is that tower. Actually, you can see it. It's got wheels on it right there, and they'd actually made a ramp for it to go up, and it's got a pole that sticks out to hit the top part of the... This was done hundreds and thousands of years ago and chiseled into stone, so we know these kind of things happened back then, see? And children need to be able to see some of these things sometimes. You know, we just don't understand how they could destroy a city sometimes. And this is just one of the ways. This is not the way that Jericho was taken, by the way. But you also see here they were digging under the wall. See that? So those are the kind of things that were available. And here's a ladder going up where they were climbing up to get over it as well. And these are all reliefs. I think, if I'm correct, those were in the Turkish Museum. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's where those were from. But Joshua calls the priests, tells them instructions, and the warriors in chapter 6, verse 6. And the priests were to take the Ark of the Covenant. And the priests, also seven of them, had horns that they blew as they went around. The men of war were to go in front of the priest, and then the priest, and then some more warriors behind. Go around once each day for 6 days. Do not make a sound, except for what? Someone. What sound was to be heard? You ever heard a horn out of an old cow horn? Some of you have. Some of you go back that far, I know. But anyway, those are the kind of things, or ram's horn probably for them anyway. But those are the kind of things that they heard as they went around. Nobody talked. Nobody. They were not to say a word. But those horns just blow. Can you imagine those people inside Jericho as they stood on the wall? What in the world are they doing? Just walking around. It would kind of lend you to think that. Everything in this city was going to be dedicated to God. They were not to take a single thing from this city for themselves. It was the first fruits of the land. Who else was dedicated to God as kind of like first fruits? Anybody remember? Who? I'm thinking of before this time, and it was the sons, the firstborn. They were dedicated. You remember, after they came out of Egypt, they were dedicated to God. And that's what I had in mind. Thank you anyway. But the city, after they went around it 7 times, what happened to the walls? Did they have to use any of those methods of bringing down the walls? They just fell down. And every man went straight in. And they took the city They killed everyone. They burned everything. And what did they do with everything in it? Did it all burn? What did they do with it? No. No, it was dedicated to God, and all of it was to be given to the tabernacle, basically. And he was, they were to use it for, the tabernacle. I think I'm right on that. All right. Whoever took anything was to be cursed, and also their families as well. Instructions were followed, the battle took place, and only Rahab and her family were saved. She later lived with Israel and married Salmon, the son of Nahshon, the prince of Judah. She was the mother of Boaz, and he married Ruth, if you remember later on, a Moabitess. We'll learn about that in the book of Ruth when we get there. Also, she was the great-great-grandmother of King David. They had conquered the cities on the east side of Jordan, but Jericho was the first in the land of Canaan. God told Joshua the same thing was to be done to Ai, which is another little city. They are to be conquered. That, along with Bethel, I think at about the same time. They took Ai first and then went on to Bethel. I think that's correct. But the problem was, when they went to Ai, what happened when they got to Ai, number two? They lost the battle. Why did they lose it, number one? Sin in the camp. That's exactly right. Someone had sinned. And so, boy, Moses, he had a come apart, you might, is what we would say today. You know, whoa, wait a minute. This little city and they beat us. You know, what is people going to say? You know, well, the problem was someone had taken something from the city of Jericho. And that man's name was what? Number three. Anybody remember that man's name? Achan. Achan. All, it was finally pointed out that he was the one, and so he was destroyed and all of his family. You know, man, what a time. He had taken some things from the city. The spoils of war could make one very rich. And Achan knew that. Those things that he had taken were very valuable. And as all these wars start to happen, and they start taking all these different, nations like the Jebusites and the Hittites and the Hivites and all those, and they capture them, they get the spoils of war. Okay? A lot of times these warriors will take all of their wealthy possessions with them to war. You know, we just think that way, y'all. You know? I don't know why they did that back then, but that's true. And we even read about some of that later on, about some of the shrouds that they had on their camels, solid gold, and things like that, you know. And then there's folks, even in America, that would kill to get gold, you know. They do for a lot less than that, even, as far as that goes. But the spoils of war could make one very wealthy. The term denoted meant that everything was holy and dedicated to God in the city of Jericho. It was all dedicated to Him. Okay. Have we got any questions? I think I've got through it all. But, if you've got a question that I can answer, if I don't, I can always ask group number one. Right? All right. Thank you all so much for your participation, and we look forward to Sunday. Jimmy will be taking up, he'll touch on chapter 6 just a little bit and move on from there. We're just about out of time, and appreciate the participation.